Welcome to today's deep dive. So let's talk about gold rushes. Usually, the smartest thing you can do during one is to just sell the pickaxes.
Right, yeah, that's the classic advice.
Well, today we're looking at a modern industrial gold rush through a stack of industry consultant reports and benchmark data.
And there is a lot of data to get through here.
There really is. And our mission today is uncovering this surprisingly counterintuitive business model of busbar machine distribution. Because it turns out selling the pickaxes here might actually leave you broke.
Yeah, which sounds crazy because the tailwind in this industry is just massive right now. Like, if you look at new data center projects, those consultant reports note that roughly 70% of them are ditching traditional cabling for busbars.
Wait, 70%? That's
I
huge.
know, right? And mostly in the gray space, meaning those back-end infrastructure areas where all the heavy power distribution happens. It is a fundamental shift.
Right. But here's the catch for you listening. Soaring demand for these electrical systems does not mean what you think it means for the businesses selling the machines that actually fabricate them.
Exactly. It's a really common misconception.
Okay, let's unpack this. Is this basically an industrial version of the classic razor and razor blades model? Like, you sell the handle for cheap just to lock people into buying the blades forever?
It is, yeah. It's the razor and razor blades model on a massive scale where the handle costs hundreds of thousands of dollars. And this highlights a huge category error people make when looking at this market.
What kind of error?
Well, you'll see wild growth forecasts for busbars. I mean, one firm says the market will hit $27.71 billion by 2035, and then another says $35.9 billion.
So they disagree by literal billions of dollars.
They do, yeah.
Oh.
But that more importantly, those numbers represent the demand for the busbars themselves. It is not the demand for busbar machines.
Wait, so the people making the actual metal bars are booming, but the folks selling the machines to make them aren't seeing that same guaranteed hockey stick growth.
Exactly, because machine demand relies entirely on a fabricator's capital expenditure, and CapEx fluctuates wildly based on things like construction cycles and, interest rates.
Oh, right. When money gets expensive, they stop buying.
Yeah, it's the very first line item a panel builder freezes when the market gets jittery.
And the benchmark data gets pretty grim here. If you just sell the machines, you're looking at a tiny 2.5% bottom line margin at best. Hold on, 2.5%?
Yeah, it's barely anything.
They're moving massive, highly complex, heavy machinery for a 2.5% margin. I
Yep.
mean, that doesn't even cover the risk of the forklift dropping the thing during delivery.
It really doesn't. The machine sale just buys you the relationship. It doesn't actually pay for the business.
So where is the actual profit coming from then?
It's hiding in those razor blades you mentioned. Parts and tooling, so things like punches, dies, and blades, those bring in about a 12% net margin.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, with gross margins hitting 35.3%. And then there's the service side, which brings in a robust 15% bottom line. European law even helps push this, actually.
Right, the law mandates that employers use competent people to inspect and maintain equipment throughout its working life, right?
Yep, so the service revenue is basically legally required.
Okay, well, if service margins are that high, why wouldn't I just skip selling those massive, heavy machines altogether? Like, just open a third-party service and parts center and skip the 2.5% hardware margin entirely.
You could try, but you would walk right into what we call the service trap.
The service trap.
Yeah, you cannot capture that lucrative service revenue without highly trained technicians. But you can't justify paying a skilled technician's salary until you already have a massive established base of machines out there in the wild needing repairs.
Ah, so it's a catch-22.
Exactly. It is a financing problem disguised as a sales problem. You have to float the business until the machine base is large enough to sustain the service team.
So the hardware is literally just a loss leader to build a local service monopoly.
Yeah, and the barrier to entry isn't just financial, it's increasingly regulatory. By January 20th, 2027, new EU regulations will require strict CE marking compliance.
Oh, I saw that. Distributors will have to verify safety markings and ensure correct language instructions.
Right, and if you modify a machine substantially for a client, you might legally become reclassified as the manufacturer.
Wow, that is a massive leap in liability.
It's a huge risk.
So, knowing all these risks, like the low hardware margins, the service trap, the looming legal liabilities, how does a distributor actually survive the early years? What is the business plan?
It all comes down to a survival metric known as absorption.
Absorption. Okay, what exactly is that?
This is the ratio of your parts and service gross margin divided by your total fixed expenses. A dealership has to model their parts and service to exceed 20 to 25% of their total business revenue by year 3.
I see. So if that service revenue eventually covers your fixed costs, you know, your rent, your utilities, your payroll, then you become immune to those CapEx freezes we talked about earlier.
Precisely. Any new machine you sell becomes pure bonus profit, but you don't need it to keep the lights on.
Got it.
And if a distributor doesn't hit that 25% threshold, the plant is doomed, regardless of how many heavy machines they manage to push out the door. The math demands that the steady annuity from parts and service outgrows the volatile hardware sales department.
This is such a wild shift in perspective. You go into this thinking you are an industrial heavyweight selling massive complex machines, but you aren't really selling machines at all. You are selling annuities.
Exactly. The machine is essentially just a very large, heavy vessel to secure long-term consumables and maintenance contracts.
It makes you wonder, for you listening, if the real value of heavy machinery distribution relies entirely on these long-term maintenance cycles and consumable parts. Are these manufacturers actually just running a software-style subscription model, cleverly disguised as heavy industry? Think about that next time you step onto a factory floor.